You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 19th of April. Were the Jazz passive? We'll touch on that. A little reality check on where Donovan is in his career and what's fair to expect. Running through your questions and why James Harden is just simply impossible to guard. We'll break it all down coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. So glad to be with you today. Thanks so much for taking the time. Always enjoy having you. This is our daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and a look, hopefully, that gives you a better understanding of what's going on with your Utah Jazz. I'm the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. This show is available to you on the new app, Himalaya. You can download it on your Apple Podcasts, Google, or your Apple Store, your Google Stores, and get it. It has great curated playlists, all sorts of other features that are fun as they kind of are moving forward in this ever-changing world of podcasting. It's also available for you on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. I often listen to it on Stitcher. You can also just get in your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Hope you're great. Today's Locked On NBA is Adam Matas and Anthony Irwin for the Locked On NBA. Trevor Booker yesterday was lots of fun. He had a few hot takes. So if you want to go grab that, that's on Locked On NBA. I went through and rewatched most of the game the other day, not all of it. I'm pretty consistent. I'm not a big into, oh, they're not having fun. Oh, they're not playing hard. I think often when you watch something, when the ball goes in the basket, it looks like they're playing harder. When the other team misses and then you're running, it looks like you're playing harder. I'm not always the biggest believer in that. I think there's nights where you're a step slow and you're tired or things like that. So I generally am not the biggest believer in that stuff. Rewatching, I will say this. I thought there was a passivity to our actions. I don't know why, but there was not a force. There was it was interesting because I thought back, Kristen Kenny had kind of been asking them for her show, for the TV show, like, what does it mean to you to play offense with force? And I generally thought we opened the game with the exact opposite. It's almost like we're coming into a dribble handoff trying to read what the defense is doing. Houston is not switching quite as much as they once did. And so you have to try to read a little bit of whether they're switching or not or what they're doing. And it was as though our guys were reading the situation instead of playing it. And it led to them being passive in their actions. And then Chris Paul is just blowing up handoffs and the sort. And we're turning it over in four of the first eight possessions to open the game. I mean, we were really, we got to just be honest. I mean, we were really bad to open that game. I don't know why. I'm just telling you, as I watched it, it just was clear early. I mean, Donovan, Joe Ingles on a bad pass. Donovan loses the ball. Donovan dribbles off his foot, and it goes into the backcourt. Almost, again, like he's got this urgency to try to go do something, but as he's looking around, he dribbles off his foot. The opening possessions of the night the other night were just awful. Joe Ingles, bad pass. Donovan, turnover. Derek Favors, corner three. I get it. Derek's in the game. He's our four. They're not guarding him. He's in the corner. He's also the worst shooter statistically in the NBA. right? Like, there's not a three-point shooter with a lower percentage to take as many shots as Derek. Rubio misses a 12-footer. You all know what I think of 12-footers. Next time down, Favors misses another three. Now we get an offensive rebound, and Favors cuts, and we get a dunk. Donovan makes a nice little mid-range jumper trying to get into himself. Then Donovan pulls for three, hoping he has it, misses. Donovan turns it over on a steal by P.J. Tucker, which I think that was a handoff. And then the next one's another Joe Ingles turnover steal by Chris Paul. And, I mean, it's not over, but it's 12-4. And it certainly feels like... And then, we actually came out, Jay checks in, makes a shot or two. But it does feel as like just right away then, we've been hit. We're now uncertain. We're doing funky defensive things, trying to confuse the best offensive player the game's seen in a long time. This side of maybe Steph, but otherwise just in general. And then we just, next thing you know, we hit two shots and then we go dry again. Rubio misses a three. Donovan misses a three. Donovan misses a kick-out three. Royce misses a three. We get no stops. It's 24-9. And it, frankly, with 5:45 left in the first quarter, like, it's actually probably over at that point. I mean, I don't mean to, like, it sounds crazy, but I can pull up the numbers for you. If the Rockets have a 15-point lead in the first quarter of a game, they're not losing. So, and we're not winning. We don't come from behind. So, for all the other stuff we're talking about, when I went and rewatched the game, I literally got to the 5:45 mark of the first quarter. I was like, oh my gosh, it was 24-9. Like, I don't actually need to watch any more than this. Like, that was the game. And so, we did come out with a level of passive, non-authoritative, play that just made you, it was a little surprising. The Rockets had a 15-point lead in the first quarter this year 12 times. They're 10-2. So, in theory, you could come back and get them. Teams won 74% of the time when they had a 15-point lead in the first quarter of games. It's not a huge number, so it's not totally over. But in their building, in that setting, I think you're probably with me. I have a bunch of great questions from you guys that I'm going to get to as the show goes on. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk about Donovan and just maybe just a quick check on where he is. But I wanted to jump on a bunch of your questions. So I'm kind of going in and out of – the reason I mentioned that, I'm kind of going in and out of the questions. I wanted to clarify that. By the way, in fairness to our guys, I made a comment a moment ago that we don't come from behind. We actually won more games last year than any team in the league while trailing by 15 in the first quarter. We were 4-4, only 51 wins all year. We had four of them. So in fairness, we actually usually can play good enough defense that we can do that. There was a question about Harden and, why he's so hard to guard. And one of the things that makes Harden so difficult to guard is the fact that he is such a great isolation player. So if we kind of just jump into this for a second and understand what's so if James Harden has an isolation possession, he averages 1.12 points per possession. Now, let me see if I can try to put this in perspective for you of how great that is. Now, the best, there would be two ways to look at it, and I think you could actually look at it a little bit and make a little bit of a mistake. So the league average offense is 1.10 points per possession, 1.1, just 1.1. So that's the league average right now, offensive points per possession. The Rockets are the best in the league at 1.15, or 115 points per 100 possessions, and we're the league average at 110 points per 100 possessions. And what you're saying is if you ran 100 possessions of James Harden, you get 112 points. So if you just came down, played a possession every single play that was James Harden, running a pick and roll, or running in isolation, you'd have the sixth best offense in the NBA. That is incredible. I mean, stunningly incredible. The next best in the league of guys that actually use isolation is DeMar DeRozan at 1.1, and it's where it's really valuable. And then you get into Bradley Beal at 1.04 and Kevin Durant at 1.04, and then you're under one really fast. Kemba Walker's pretty good too. The other thing is that Harden runs two times more than anyone else. But let me take another angle on this, just so you understand how truly great it is. And that is half-court offense. Because it's really not fair to compare James Harden isolation to the rest of the league, because 15% of all possessions in the NBA are in transition, and the average transition possession is 1.23 points per possession. So really what you should be doing is comparing James Harden's 1.12 points in isolation to half-court possessions, which happen at about 80% of the time in the league. And the average half-court possession in the league is 95 points per 100 possessions. So in isolation, James Harden is 1.12. The league average is 0.95. That's over 100 possessions. If the league ran all their half-court stuff and James Harden just went isolation, he would score 17 more points than the average team in the NBA. In isolation, which is the least efficient play in the league. It's really mind-blowing. It's why a team that's the number one defensive team in the league throws their defensive scheme out the window to try to go figure this out. The average isolation in the league is 0.9, and he's 1.12. It's really incredible. By the way, I was just noticing something. Okay, never mind. We're actually a better half-court offensive team than the Denver Nuggets. It's interesting. That was my by the way. I knew we were better than Oklahoma City, and I knew that we in the half-court, our offense is actually better than Oklahoma City and better than Denver for playoff purposes. All right, so what's so tricky about that is that most defensives that Harden now let me I'll elaborate on this coming up here in a second. I just went long, so let me come back. I'll elaborate on what that isolation truly does to blow up everybody's defensive schemes. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, located in Logan and Linden. All right, if you're in the market to test drive or to look for a car, I just ask you this. Stop by Murdoch Hyundai and look at what you can get for your dollar. You can decide what car you like the best. I mean, I'll tell a story. This is many, many years ago. My wife and I bought our first car together. We got married in, let me look at the inside of my ring, like 2001. So this is probably, right around then. Long, long time ago. And we had a specific car. I did all the research. I know that stuns you. And broke down what the best value was, and very similar to what I did when we bought the Santa Fe. And, researched what gets me the best value and what gets me the most storage space and everything. And I found the car, and I got to the lot, and I test drove it, and it was fine. And I went to buy it, and I didn't like the car. I didn't like the way it looked. And so I actually went and bought the upscale version of it that was made by its nicer partner, right? So the Genesis to the Hyundai, because I thought it looked better. It was more expensive, but it looked better. So I'm not going to tell you what car to buy, because it has to look and feel. But do the research. If you do the research, I think you'll find out, as I did, safety, space, add-ons, features. For the price, Hyundai will blow you out of the water. So at least go stop by, check out, look at it, see See how you feel about it. It's Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street, also in Logan and in Linden. I'm driving the new Santa Fe. It's incredible. It drives for itself. It slows down on curves when I have the cruise control. It may be a little higher than I should coming into a curve. It automatically does the whole read the car in front of me. It stays in the lanes for me. It's quite fabulous. It's the new Santa Fe. Check it out. 4646 South State Street, as well as in Logan and in Linden. Today's show is also brought to you by Homie. Homie is revolutionizing the real estate world out there and giving you equity. Really, quite simply, in the simplest form, here's how I would describe Homie. We're going to do for you the same thing that's been done for decades, long decades. We're going to do it for you at the same efficiency. In other words, right now, Homie is selling faster than the market, selling for more than the market. And we are going to just give you a bunch more equity. Now, it's not quite like they're just giving it to you, but instead of taking a percentage of the real estate the way that so many of it has been done forever, what they are doing is they have a set flat fee of $1,500 to list your house. Now, if you have a $1 million house, that's going to be a tremendous savings. If you have a $300,000 house, that's going to be a little bit of a lessing, but it's still a savings because it's not taking 6%. If you went and did an upgrade on your house, why are you giving away more money? If you went and bought the right house and you're selling it in the market and it happens to be the market's on the top, why are you giving away more money? Homie says you shouldn't. You should keep all the equity you can. So for $1,500, you can list your house with Homie, and then their team of experts will help you out, and their group philosophy of having a team of people to work with you will get it done. Find out more by texting LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's 8 LOCK to 88588. LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588 to find out more and how you can save equity when you're selling your home. All right, here's the tricky part about this whole James Harden isolation awesomeness that I just talked about. I'm sure you're tired of it, but this is hopefully interesting. Almost every defense in the NBA is set to defend the pick and roll. And Harden is great in the pick and roll as well. He's a 1 point, but he's not as great. That's what's crazy. He's 1.02 points per pick and roll. He's 1.12 points per isolation. Now, if he's playing pick and roll, the Jazz have a million different coverages. Everyone in the league does. You either blitz it. That's usually what Oklahoma City does. You bring the big up on it. You drop the big. You have Gobert play both Capella and Harden. That's what we did most of last year in the playoffs, and it really caused them a lot of problems. It's what we did earlier this year and caused them some problems. Because then we hugged their shooters and Gobert drops with Capella and Harden is coming at and you're holding your ground and, you know, and the guard is staying kind of with Harden or on his side a little bit while he's coming, right? That's really what we've been trying to replicate. And that's, or you play even to the screen and really pressure Harden, but then Capella can get behind you. There's all sorts of things you can do. And it's what every NBA team and league does a million times over. And knows exactly how to play. But because Harden is the one player in the NBA who's actually better in isolation than pick and roll, maybe DeMar DeRozan too, but he plays in a different manner, they actually will just go isolation. And now it causes you to absolutely get completely flustered. And that's what's really happened in this series with the Jazz and with their defense. Is it because Harden is so incredible with his isolation games, you don't bring the big to the ball, you don't bring anyone, you can just go, and then every single defensive coverage that you've had all year long is out the window. So if we look at James Harden's isolation plays against the Jazz throughout the year, this will all begin to make sense. Now, when the series started, I shared with you that the Jazz had had some of the best defensive games against the Rockets all year. And Harden ran less isolation. So in the first game of the year when they still had Carmelo, Harden ran 11 isolation plays. In their second matchup, December 16th, he ran 13 isolation plays. We won those two games. On December 17th, when they beat us by five in a good game, he ran 26 isolation plays. He averaged 1.2 points per isolation. Wow. February 2nd, he ran 22 isolations against us. He ran 1.23 points per isolation and beat us in those two games. And that's why you come out with a radical defense trying to change everything, because simply in the last two matchups, when he had 46 and 47, he went nuts. In the first game, when we went to the open the door, force him right, hard right, craziness, he had 29 isolation plays. He averaged 1 point off isolation. We actually slowed him down. We couldn't slow down the rest of the team. And the other night, he had 27 isolation plays at 1.20 when we went back to a regular defense. He's just that great. But the crazy thing is 1.20 in isolation means they don't have to run any pick and rolls, which means you're simply not getting into your regular defensive schemes at all. At all. And that's what makes him so unbelievable. What's he done in regards to picks? Let me see what I can do here. Can I get ball handler game? Here we go. Okay. Harden on pick and rolls on the October 24th game. He ran 38 for 0.83 points per. In other words, we win that game. That's in early October. That's with Carmelo. They ran 38 pick and rolls, and we dominate them. December 6th, he runs 33 pick and rolls for 0.65 points. He's a 1.02 guy against us, against the number one defense in the league. The pick and roll defense is unbelievable. 0.65, 0.83, amazing. Kill him. Then we go to the December 17th game. He runs 22 pick and rolls. He's clearly made some adjustments. They're up to 1.26. But when they come back on February 2nd, he runs 21 pick and rolls at 1.4. So in the last two matchups in the regular season, that was Austin Rivers. On the December 2nd game, James Harden ran 27 pick and rolls at 0.92. So in the four regular season games, Harden runs pick and rolls. He's at 0.83. He's at 0.65, which is terrible. He's at a good game at 1.26. We adjust. He's at 0.92. Thus far in the playoffs, in the two playoff games, James Harden has run almost no pick and roll. On the April 14th game, game one, he ran 23 pick and rolls. He averaged 0.95 points per pick and roll. Didn't work. That's not good enough for them. 0.95, that's league average. That's us holding them down exactly as we're supposed to. And then on April, in the game two, he only ran 15 pick and rolls the entire game. So what they have basically done is taken our number one defense, which is the number one pick and roll defense in the NBA, which stops every pick and roll better than anyone, even the great James Harden pick and rolls. And they just don't run pick and roll. Because they have the singular isolation player in the league who can just go get buckets. And we're trying to do these crazy defensive things because what we want to do is try to simulate the pick and roll defense, and we can't figure that. We just can't get it done. And then from our team standpoint, there has to be some level of like, wait a sec, we are the best in the league and we're changing up what we're doing, and it's got to rip at your confidence. It just has to. That's how crazy what James Harden is doing is here. Okay, I want to talk about Donovan I'm way off time. And I knew I was going to get in that hard, and I just didn't think it was going to take that long. Here's the thing on Donovan. Remember the story I've been telling all year long about how if you take second-year guards averaging 20 points, no second scorer, that there were only four of them that ever won at least 40 games. So Donovan won 50 games. Donovan was the first second-year guard, 20 points a game, starter wing, 20 points a game, no second scorer to get himself to 50 wins. Never been done. Carmelo, 47. Vince Carter, like 44. LeBron, like 43. Derrick Rose, like 41. Okay, incredible. Obviously had Rudy, but in the defense. So let's take a look at what those four guys did in their playoffs in their second year. LeBron didn't make it. LeBron James, second year in the NBA, leading scorer, no second scorer. They don't make the playoffs. Vince Carter's second year in the playoffs, they get swept by the Knicks. Vince Carter shoots 30% from the field and 10% from three. He goes 15 of 50 shooting. Derrick Rose, they lose in five to Cleveland. He actually has a great series. He scores 27 points a game, shoots 46% from the field, 33% from three, and it propels him to his MVP season. Melo loses in five to the Spurs. He shoots 42%, does not hit a three, has 13 turnovers and 10 assists. Terrible series. Donovan is growing up right before our eyes. And that's really, really hard for him. Remember, the Locked On NBA has a fabulous Twitter feed for you to follow called Locked On NBA Net. It's a collection of all of our hosts on one network or one feed for you. You can follow all the NBA action on Locked On NBA Net, also available on Instagram. All right, few final thoughts to get answers to your questions from yesterday's Facebook. One of the questions was on the idea that the Jazz get high shot quality all the time. Where do they actually rank compared to every other team? Good question. So the Jazz have the best quantified shot quality in the league. The Jazz are 21st in the league in shooting. The only playoff teams that are lower are Brooklyn, Oklahoma City, and Detroit. Detroit's 28th in the league in shooting. So the Jazz are a percentage point below in effective field goal percentage what they get on the value of their shots. What's interesting about that is if we really dug into it a little bit, is if you start to look at individual players, I'm sure it's a little different because Rudy, I would assume, and Derek, I would assume, well, Derek's three-point shooting, maybe not, are high. So let's look at that. So Kyle Korver is a plus six. He shoots 6 percentage points better than his effective field goal percentage. George Niang is plus five. Joe Ingles is plus 3.7. Rudy is plus 1.3. Donovan's even. On the flip side, Dante, who's not playing, is 7 percentage points below what he should be based on his shot quality. Grayson is a minus 7. Ricky Rubio is a minus 5.8. Jay Crowder is a minus 5.4. For guys that have taken over 500 shots, right? So that's, if you take 500 shots, you take five or six a game. The worst shooters in the NBA, 500 shots, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Josh Okogie, the rookie in Minnesota, Dorian Finney-Smith, DeLon Wright, which is interesting because I love DeLon Wright, but Tyreek Evans, Jonathan Isaac, DeAndre Bembry, Ricky Rubio is eighth, and Jay Crowder is 10th. Jay Crowder and Al Farouq Aminu are the two lowest, maybe if you count Rondae Hollis. I don't even know what position Rondae Hollis-Jefferson plays. I mean, he's just a kind of a weird player. So Ricky Rubio and DeLon Wright are the two lowest shooting point guards and Jay Crowder and Al-Farouq Aminu are the two lowest stretch fours based on the quality of shots they get. And that's why when the series started, I zeroed in on those two to say, hey, like, open shots by Crowder and Rubio are going to be the key to this series. And thus far, Jay is one of nine, and Ricky's 2 of 6. So they're a combined 3 of 15 on open three looks. That's the key there. And that's why those guys are being left open, and it's also why they've got to hit. So there's a little bit of misleading, not misleading, but there's a little bit to, when you look at us as a team, we have the best shot quality because we get, because Rudy Gobert took 721 shots with the best single shot quality. Derek Favors has the fourth best shot quality of any player in the league with 622 shots. So 1,300 of our shots are 1 or 4 in the league in just overall shot quality. Derek is actually shoots a little less well than he should, considering he takes those threes. So that was a great question. Jennifer asked, is it really realistic to ever win a title? There's been 11 teams that have won the last 35 titles. I mean, you can shoot for it, but I think I've always said this, if that's your end all of what you're hoping for, then I think, you know, you're inevitably going to be disappointed. And I think particularly, I mean, you know, it's very hard to get a collection of talent that gets you to win it. I personally am one who believes in the journey of the season and the enjoyment of the season. I also think you should build your team to get to the second round of the playoffs, and then you just hope things happen your way. I think that, you know, you've got to try to get to that point. Would have been easier, obviously, for us to get that in the other half of the bracket this year. Final one is, why don't the guys look like they're having fun? Because they're playing a great team. I do think that we've gotten passive and we're just blown up. I mean, hopefully we're going to pull something off on Saturday, but let's just walk through it one last final time here so that we all understand it. It doesn't make this any more fun, but so what do we do great? We run the most picks of any team offensively in the NBA, right? So that's, we run the most picks of any team in the league during the season, and we are fifth best in the NBA at running those picks. And the Rockets switch teams run the fewest picks against the Rockets of any team, third fewest picks against any team in the NBA. And the Rockets are pretty darn good at defending it. They're about the 10th best in the league at defending picks because people just don't run them against them. What else do we do great? We're the number one team in the league at defending the pick and roll. Us in Toronto are the number one team in the league at defending the pick and roll. Who runs, you know, the Rockets run very few picks and moreover have a player that means that they don't need to run them in any way, shape, or form because he's that good in the pick and roll. So it just makes it a very, very difficult series for us. And when it's that difficult, I think it just kind of busts you know it as a player, and you understand that you're having to do things that just aren't who you are as a team. And when you have to do that, you probably are a little less confident, you're a little less sure, and then you look like you're passive. That's my analysis. Let's hope that the home crowd gives them a bounce and we pull something off late Saturday night. Have a good one. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The Locked